You're listening to SBS News.
For two decades, Fawzia Koofi has used her platform as one of Afghanistan's most prominent female politicians to speak up for women's rights. It's a vocation that's come at a great personal cost. She's already survived two assassination attempts, and she says she knows more are being plotted.
I think what I have gone through kept me going because, I have gone through so much that I don't even know what does a regular life mean, to be honest. Sometimes when I travel abroad and I see, how people sit in a coffee shop, for instance, or walk or do these normal things, these look very, very strange for me because all my life has always been either a political fight, a struggle, or oppression.
That struggle began the very day Miss Koofi was born, left out in the harsh Afghan sun to die because she was a girl. She survived, becoming the only girl in her family to go to school and eventually earning her master's degree. When the Taliban fell in late 2001 after a brutal six-year rule that saw girls and women banned from schools and work, Miss Koofi entered politics. She rose through the ranks, becoming the Afghan parliament's first ever female deputy second speaker and the first woman to lead an Afghan political party. Then, last year, just weeks after the last attempt on her life, she came face to face with the Taliban, one of only four women in the room for the Afghan government's historic peace talks with the militants.
And my injured hand was still in cast, and the wound was open, but I never tried to demonstrate that I am being affected or, afraid or in stress or whatever. Their thinking was that women are there to just confront them. They do not have logic. They're not equipped with knowledge related to their country. But after being in the room for a few days with them, talking about different matters of my country, I think they have started to change their perspective and become a little bit more, I would say, respectful.
Ms. Koofi says the negotiations have not yet turned to the question of women's rights, but she's not prepared to use the issue as a bargaining chip with the Taliban.
The woman and human rights issue is not anymore a priority by both parties. So each party tried to prioritize, military gains, and people are not even in the full front of the focus. And that is worrisome. Women, of course, as the most vulnerable of the society. Taliban will never be convinced, even if they will be confronted on their views about the Islamic rights of women.
Even so, what Ms. Koofi and her peers are trying to negotiate is avoiding a return of the kind of oppressive rule over women of the late 90s. When the Taliban first took control of Afghanistan from 1996 until 2001, severe restrictions were imposed on women. Girls were banned from schools, and almost all women were forced to stop working. They could only leave home if chaperoned by a male relative while wearing a burqa, and were only allowed contact with men who were family. Women who were caught flouting their rules were often punished publicly and violently. Today, Taliban representatives insist they have changed their views on women, but they have failed to detail how. Reports are already emerging from districts that have fallen to the Taliban that girls' schools are being closed and so-called dress code pamphlets are being distributed. Civil servant Ghassu Yari is one of a group of Afghan women's rights activists who have lobbied the Taliban directly in recent months. She says they recently spoke to a Taliban representative on the social network Clubhouse, asking them two questions. Do you believe in elections? And do you believe in a woman's right to work?
So they said, we don't believe in election. We don't believe in people voting, including women. And we don't believe in democracy. We only can allow women to work is when it's necessary. The example was women doctors. It was the first time the Taliban came forward using a very modern tool to come and talk to people. And everybody told the Taliban that you can't just go on the street and kill people. You can't stop girls from schools.
It's a fight that is particularly personal for Miss Yari. At just 6 years old, she was forcibly engaged to a pro-Taliban commander's son. They were due to be married when she turned 18.
It was 2 months before my marriage ceremony. Everything was decided. My mom kind of surrendered. said, I cannot save you, you just have to go. I knew that if I go to his house, I will not be allowed to continue my education. I received my visa and my fiancé or this warlord didn't know anything about it. I left the country.
Ms. Yari went on to earn her bachelor's and master's degrees in the US, returning to Afghanistan in 2015 and eventually joining the government's Independent Civil Service Commission. She kept a low profile until she heard her fiancé and his father had been killed by a rival faction. She's not looked back since, not afraid to speak out to defend the values the country has built in the past 20 years.
We are under threat. I think women who are very vocal, who are giving interviews, who are activists, it's hard in terms of the pressure and psychological pressure every single woman face here. But the bottom story is that we have to resist. Right, we have to sustain our activism. If we don't do that, I don't think any woman from other countries will come do that for us. Yes, we are ready to lose our lives, but I don't think we are ready to lose the future of our children, especially girls.
In the 20 years since the Taliban were removed from power, a generation of Afghan women and girls have embraced the opportunity to get educated. More than 20% of the country's workforce is now made up of women. While peace talks are ongoing, U.S. intelligence agencies are predicting the Afghan government could collapse completely within 6 months of their military withdrawal. Afghanistan researcher Dr. Suzanne Schmeidel says many of them are now facing a difficult choice: abandon the country or stay and risk losing the lives they have built.
Particularly Kabul, but other urban centres, have become a safe haven for an educated, more modern-oriented urban middle class. So for most of them, the outlooks are bleak, and there's a good potential that with the Taliban coming back to power, a lot of this human capital, in many ways people call it a demographic dividend, will be leaving Afghanistan, or will be trying to leave Afghanistan, and that is in many ways devastating to see.
Fahonde Akbari is one of the Afghan women weighing up that decision from here in Australia. Her family fled Afghanistan in the midst of the Taliban's rule in 1998, staying in refugee camps in Pakistan and Iran before being settled in Australia on humanitarian visas when she was 12 years old. Despite having no formal education before the 8th grade, Ms. Akbari is now earning her PhD at Canberra's Australian National University, focusing on the peace negotiations with the Taliban.
Now, the Taliban are not compromising on anything because what they want, they already got from the US, a timetable for withdrawal as well as international legitimacy and recognition by making them a partner to the US, signing an agreement with them. Oh, the situation is very tense. The urgency there is the dilemma between, are you going to stay and fight and die, or are you going to escape from the country?
Ms. Akbari's goal was ultimately to return to Afghanistan and use her expertise to benefit the country. But she's a member of the Hazara ethnic minority, who have already been experiencing heightened violence over the past few months as the Taliban has gained more control. Now she's unsure whether a return will be possible.
The reason that I've been studying Afghanistan was also to prepare myself. In a way, it is... It is very heartbreaking that as I'm finishing my studies and it's time for me to go back, the space for people like me is shrinking more and more in the country, and we might not be welcomed. But the struggle for freedom, for human rights will continue, and I will play my very little role to do what I can.
Claudia Farhart, SBS News.